Hello, my friends. It's Monday, April 20th, 2026, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State Refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your Monday morning wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. And it goes down smooth. Hey! On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about the 420 holiday and legalization stall nationwide. We'll also cover the Palantir Manifesto and how the world is moving on without the United States of America. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Are you 6 years old?
I've wanted to do that ever since I was 6 years old.
You were only 6 years old.
6 years old.
Oh, 6 years old!
I was maybe 6 years old.
The girl was 6 years old.
Well, let me tell you about the great day I had at gig work this last week. Here's the tale of how I broadened the understanding a little girl has of what a man can be. So I'm waiting in the Safeway aisle to pick up a prescription from its pharmacy at the back of the store. Ahead of me is this tall, young, attractive blonde woman, so better than usual working conditions. And then she says toward the lower shelf of toilet paper, "I think someone else is going to find you." And then I look down to my right where she's focused, and there's this little girl peeking out from behind the Charmin Mega 30 equals 120 toilet paper. And by the way, before I go on, is anyone else sick of having to do algebra problems when you buy toilet paper or paper towels? Like, do I get the 4 equals 8 or the 6 equals 15 or the 12 equals 36 or the 30 equals 120? Is there any toilet paper sold anymore where X equals 1? Anyway, sorry. So this little girl, she's hiding on the bottom shelf behind all the packages of toilet paper and stuff. And she's giggling and chatting with her mom, and she's playing in her fort. And I'm kind of just on my phone noticing this interaction that's going on and half scrolling my phone, when suddenly the girl is out from the shelf and she's addressing me. She's holding up this little piece of plastic. She says, "I have a phone too." And she's holding up one of these little plastic kitty phones, right? Now, this little girl, she's, you know, brown-skinned girl, dark hair, brown eyes. She kind of looks like my five-year-old granddaughter, actually. She's this animated, outgoing little girl. She's unafraid, totally unafraid of striking up a conversation with this big, tall stranger. So I said, "Oh, yeah, I have a phone, too." And she goes, "Oh, well, do you have games?" And I kind of said, "Maybe." And I'm looking over at mom, you know, like, should I keep talking to the little girl? I don't want you to be creeped out or nothing. But mom's cool with it. She actually kind of looks relieved that someone's taking the attention for now. So, all right. I kind of squat down a little bit so I can talk to the little girl. I said, "All right, let's see if I have any games." And I kind of recognize mom's look. You know, she's got that look of a mom who's got a intelligent, precocious child who's outgoing and unafraid, and she's a little tired of it. I recognize that look on my mom's face, believe me. Anyway, so I'm like, "Yeah, let's see if I have any games," right? So we're scrolling through my phone, and she scrolls through the apps. And it's amazing how well kids can scroll through phones these days, right? But anyway, she scrolls through. She finds this little Tetris-like game, you know, and then she starts playing it. And we're kind of playing and chatting. I'm like, "Oh, there, you got one. Oh, good. Oh, take that one. Oh, good. Good job. Oh, yay. And high five. Woohoo." And, you know, I'm just playing with this little girl, and it's going along just fine. And then the pharmaceutical line moves, and so mom has to move up a step, and so I have to kind of get out of my crouch and stand up to move ahead. And that's when the little girl sees my hands holding the phone, and she asks loudly, but I mean not any louder than we'd been playing, but she loudly asks, "Are you a girl?" Now, I've been asked a lot of things in my life, but never that. But I said, "Nope." She goes, "But do you have color on your nails?" On my fingernails, right? And I said, "Well, yes, I do. That's because I like to express myself." And then I hold out my hands and show her my nails so she can see all of the painting on them. And so she starts quizzing me about, you know, the painting on my fingernails. And what I've got going currently is I've got F War on my left hand and F ice on my right hand, and on my thumbnails, on my left thumbnail, I've got the rainbow pride flag, and on my right thumbnail, I got the trans pride flag, and I'm just answering her questions, just matter of fact. She wants to see the purple on the rainbow flag. There it is. There's the purple, right? And then out of left field, she says, I know you pee standing up. But not missing a beat, I say, yeah, usually, but sometimes I sit down. Mom, in the meantime, she's like aghast, like, oh my God, don't ask him that. But then when she realizes I'm not offended or anything, she kind of relaxes a bit. And then the little girl points at my right nipple. And she says, you know, I got this like tight lavender t-shirt on, right? So she can see the pokey poking out, right? She goes, I can see your boobies, but they're really small. Yeah, thanks, kid. Like, yeah, I know I could lose 30 pounds. Thanks, appreciate it. But I keep my composure, and I'm like, yeah, well, thank goodness. What's your name? Trying to change the subject, right? She says, Mia. I said, oh, I'm Russ. And I turn over to her mom, and I said, hey, I got a granddaughter about her age. What is she, 5? And mom says, oh, she's 6. And then Mia helpfully interjects, my mom's 29. That got an eye roll. I said, well, Mia, I'm 58. Do you know what that means? She says, what? She says, I said, it means I'm twice as old as your mom. Whoa. When I was as young as your mom was just being born. And that's about as far as it got, because then the pharmacy line moved again, and now it's mom's turn. And so she says, come on, Mia, and takes her hand, and they walk up to the pharmacist, and Mia turns around, spins to me, and waves with her other hand, says, bye, Russ. And I say, bye, Mia. And boy, I tell you, folks, I was smiling for the rest of my day. Because, you know, I mean, technically, I guess, with my double-pierced hooped earrings and my painted fingernails and my pastel sartorial flair, I guess I'm gender nonconforming. I mean, at least in this 62% Carhartt Trumpy County. And there were some other folks in line, standard issue heteronormative Republican types in the line as well. So kind of felt prideful and honorable to be some old male queer stranger getting along with this curious straight kid. That's my adventures in the Safeway pharmaceutical aisle. And speaking of pharmaceuticals,
for 15 years, scientists at Scrabble Pharmaceuticals have had one goal: take 7 random Scrabble tiles and make a drug out of it. Our research has developed such 7-letter wonder drugs as Austedo, Prevnar, Vraylar, Rexulti, Ubrelvy, and Tremfya. But while these drugs have been miraculous at treating tardive dyskinesia, pneumococcal disease, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's agitation, migraine, psoriatic arthritis, and others, none of them were able to break that critical barrier, scoring 20 points or more in Scrabble. Recently, 2 of our newest drugs crossed that threshold: Skyrizi, which scores 23 points, and Bimzelx, a radical new word that combines high-scoring Z and X for an astounding 27 points. Still, our customers clamored for new wonder drugs that could break the Scrabble record of 35 points for 7-letter words like quizzed and jazzily. Well, wait no more. We here at Scrabble Pharmaceuticals are excited to announce a new wonder drug that packs the most possible points into a pronounceable 7-letter word. Ask your doctor about new Xjyzyk. X-J-Y-Z-Z-Y-Q, a wonder drug that packs a whopping 54 points into just 7 letters, twice the Scrabble power of Bimzelx. What does Xjyzyk do? We don't know yet, but you should ask your doctor for Xjyzyk anyway. Scrabble Pharmaceuticals, creating unique internet searchable names for drugs from 7 random letters since 2011.
Sitting there freezing under a blanket at the Washington
Commanders
games.
The number one draft pick of the Washington
Commanders.
the goal line tendencies of the Washington
Commanders.
I would support the North Koreans if they were playing the Washington
Commanders.
We're coming up on the NFL draft, and I saw something come across my feed that has generated a little bit of controversy. Comes from the Washington football team, the Commanders, which were formerly known by an epithet for Native Americans, and formerly used Native American iconography like the feather, headdress, the symbol of the Native American profile. And over decades and decades and decades, people complained about this, about using people as mascots, about denigrating Native American culture. And that finally culminated in Washington changing its name for a couple years to the Washington football team, and then finally to the Washington Commanders, which they've been for a couple, 2-3 years now. Well, they've come out with this new logo for the Washington Commanders, and it's the red and yellow W that they've been using. Fine, that's great. But making its way through the W from left to right is a big yellow spear, reminiscent of the type of iconography that they had used before with the headdress and the feather and the Indian and all of that. And so Native American groups are slamming this new, what they're calling an alternate Washington Commanders logo that has this spear in it. And it was really interesting getting into the comments on this on Blue Sky and watching all the white folks in there that were defending this logo. They were saying, well, come on now, the spear is universal across cultures. Why, Africans use spears, and Romans use spears, and medieval knights use spears. So how can you say this is racist against Native Americans? It's just a spear. Come on now, guys. You're being a little too clever by half. First of all, it doesn't resemble any of the types of spears used by any of those aforementioned folks. It is a very obvious-looking Native American-type spear that looks very much like the Native American spear that they had used before in their logo that had the Native American head and the feather. So it's obviously a callback. This is obviously a callback to those racists out there that hate the fact that the name has been changed. They want to see it go back to that iconography. And this defense, oh, it's just a spear, it reminds me of all those white supremacists that do the OK sign, you know, the white power sign. And they say, oh, no, it's just an OK sign. Or when they come out and they on their campuses, they'll put out flyers that'll say, it's OK to be white. Well, what's wrong with that? Is it not okay to be white? Too clever by half, guys. Look, if your team has been denigrating Native Americans for the span of decades and decades, and it took many decades to get you to change that, to recognize how it was being offensive to the Native American people, don't you think it would behoove you as a team to stay as far away from anything that might bring that back up? You're the Commanders. So do something that has to do with modern military, right? If you're going to put anything on there, put a missile, a gun, a jet, something that you'd be commanding in a modern army. Nobody is commanding any armies these days with spears.
Our top story tonight.
Here's your host.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, November 7th, 2012, and it's got to be legal in two states in the United States. Are you excited as we are here at Rolla J? I'm telling you. Well, folks, today, of course, is my holiday. It is 420. April 20th, the unofficial stoner holiday, which now I guess is kind of official, especially if you're living here in Southern Oregon. Went out to the dispensary yesterday, one of dozens, scores of dispensaries that we have around here. Literally, there are some places where there's two or three dispensaries within one corner. Anyway, went to the dispensary yesterday, had 40% off of vape products, was able to get a 1 gram all-in-one disposable vape for $11. That's right, $11 a gram. Some of you out there I know are just like, what? Yeah, $11 a gram. That's because I'm from Southern Oregon, and this is where the weed is from. This is where the weed is made, folks. And it brings me to this discussion about 420 and the stall that we've had recently in the progress of marijuana legalization in the United States of America. First of all, the 420 holiday, if you don't know, was invented in the 1970s. And this was all information that was unearthed by a former colleague of mine, Steve Bloom, who is an editor at High Times magazine and currently running the website celebstoner.com. And Steve Bloom uncovered this information where at the Grateful Dead show and the folks that were touring around with the Grateful Dead in those times came to understand 420 as a secret code for smoking weed. And how it came about is back in the 1970s, I think 71, 72, sometime around that era, there was a group of high school students in San Rafael, California called the Waldos. Now, why they called themselves the Waldos, I don't remember. But they were called the Waldos. And they were, you know, surfer kid stoner types, right? And they all would gather together at this particular place, the statue, I think it was. They'd gather together after extracurricular activities to smoke weed together. And, you know, school would get out at like 3 and extracurriculars out by 4. And so they'd all meet at 20 after at this particular statue. And so the 420 was the time that they would all gather together to smoke. And that was just their own kind of in joke. But then one of the Waldos, after high school graduation, ends up becoming a roadie working with the Grateful Dead. And so he kind of passes on this 420 thing, ends up making it to some flyers for the Shakedown Street, which is the, you know, the market at the Grateful Dead shows. And from there it spread. Steve Bloom brought it to High Times magazine. They did a story on it and it caught on like wildfire. And nowadays, pretty much everybody knows what 420 is all about, that it's the stoner holiday. And so all the dispensaries in the legal states, the 24 legal states that we got in the United States, and most of the states that are medical also have some sort of specials that'll go on 420. So it's our unofficial holiday. But on this holiday, I'm a little concerned because we're starting to see some backslide in the progress toward marijuana legalization. We hit our high in the Gallup poll, if you're pardon the pun, of support for marijuana legalization a few years ago, 2-3 years ago. It came up to 70% support in the latest Gallup poll. But since then, we've seen the polls backsliding a bit, getting into the 60s and even some polls in the high 50s for support for marijuana legalization. Support is holding relatively steady among Democrats and independents, but it is fallen among Republicans. And there are some theories about this as well. Also, taking a look at the fact that we had some rather strong success with marijuana legalization at the state level, starting in 2012 with Colorado and Washington, then 2014 with Alaska and Oregon, and going on for there to the point where just about every election cycle, every 2 years, we would have 2 or 3 or 4 states voting on medical marijuana or marijuana legalization. That's gotten us to where we're at now, where we've got our 24 legal states, and every state but Idaho has some form of medical marijuana. Yeah, Idaho's the last one, folks. But since then, the momentum has stalled. In 2024, there were 3 different things on the ballot for marijuana legalization. They all failed. Although I don't know if I want to count Florida's as failing, because it did get 57% of the vote. But in Florida, you have to have 60% to pass a constitutional amendment. And I was reading an article the other day about why this stall might have taken place. And the first one is that we've picked all the low-hanging fruit. Marijuana legalization has always been a feature of state initiative and referendum power. The states that have the power of the people to put out a petition and get something put on the ballot for people to vote on. Well, we've pretty much got all those states. Pretty much every state that's got initiative and referendum power has passed a marijuana legalization or medical marijuana law, with the exception of Idaho. Again, Idaho has the initiative power, but Idaho legislatures are actually trying to take that initiative power away to pass a marijuana law. They literally have a constitutional amendment on the ballot in the 2026 election coming this November that will decide that only the legislature has the power to change marijuana laws. They are literally going to put in the Idaho Constitution something to take away power from the people on this one subject to be able to pass an initiative about. And other than Idaho, and I think Wyoming, I think every other state that has initiative power has already been covered. So trying to get it through legislatures, and it has happened through a few legislatures, don't get me wrong. There are some wise lawmakers out there that are willing to legalize marijuana. But the remaining states that don't have marijuana legalization, almost all of them are Republican trifecta states that aren't about to put any sort of marijuana legalization bill on the floor. Pennsylvania, I believe, is the one that's a split state. Josh Shapiro is the Democratic governor, but he's got like a half Republican, half Democrat legislature. And then Hawaii is the only Democratic trifecta state that does not have marijuana legalization, but they at least have medical marijuana. So that may be part of the situation, is that we've cut down all the low-hanging fruit, and all the rest of the states are going to be a lot harder to pass. But another consideration has to do with the wave of studies that have come out since legalization that purport to show terrible harms from marijuana. Now, I always take these studies with a grain of salt, because marijuana has been used by the American people in fairly large numbers since the 60s. And if there were going to be any major societal effects from that, I think we'd have seen them by now. You know, we didn't see massive increases in schizophrenia. We didn't see massive increases in lung cancer due to marijuana smoking or cannabis use in any way. But they're going to keep studying. They're going to keep trying to find harms where there may be none. They find studies showing that teenagers that smoke a lot of pot are more likely to get psychosis. Well, that's a good thing we didn't legalize for teenagers, isn't it? It's a good thing we made it age 21, isn't it? Like, trying to purport a harm from something by the illegal use of it is not a good reason to make it illegal again, right? If the kids smoking pot are doing so illegally, what is making it illegal going to help in any way? And they, you know, they want to say, oh, well, now that marijuana is legalized, kids have whole lot more access to it. And yet we find in all of the sting operations that they do in places like Colorado and Oregon and California, where they send out agents with fake IDs who are too young to buy things, they find that the compliance rate in marijuana stores is in the high 90s, like 96, 97, 98% compliance with ID checks for minors, whereas alcohol, it runs in the 80s, depending on the venue, depending on whether you're talking buying from a store, buying from a concert venue, buying from a sports stadium, whatever. But the compliance is very bad for alcohol. About 1 out of 5 of the kids that try to get alcohol illegally can do so. And it's like, what, 1 out of 50 for marijuana? So we're doing a much better job with marijuana keeping it out of kids' hands. And then they'll try to point to other indications that the medical uses of marijuana have been overblown. That we went and studied it, and the people that say they're using it for anxiety, it didn't really help their anxiety. It didn't really help their PTSD. Well, that to me does not give any good reason for making it illegal again. Maybe it wasn't as good as advertised, but it's not, that doesn't make it a bad thing. And again, I always have to take with a grain of salt these studies, because a lot of times what they're studying here is the marijuana they have access to legally through the federal government. And I don't know if you folks know this, but the federal government grows weed.
Yeah.
Federal government grows weed. They've got a United States Department of Agriculture certified farm overseen by the Drug Enforcement Administration at the University of Mississippi. For the longest time, the guy running it named Mahmoud El Soholi. And this was the official U.S. government pot farm that comports with the UN treaties that have to do with how we take care of controlled substances. And it's the only legal place under federal law that pot can be grown. And it's the only pot that can be studied under federal law. So when researchers want to come up with these studies that say the people using pot for anxiety, the people using pot for PTSD, etc., if they're basing these studies off the pot they're getting from the University of Mississippi, well, then they're not really studying marijuana, because the pot at the University of Mississippi sucks. Oh, it's bad weed, folks. I've actually seen it. There still remains, I believe, one federal medical marijuana patient named Irv Rosenfeld. There were 28 of them. Way back in the day in the 70s, when they were first discovering that cannabis had uses for things like giving people appetite when they're having AIDS wasting syndrome or cancer chemotherapy. Way back in the day, when they first created this pot farm at the University of Mississippi, they also created this program, the Investigative New Drug Program, and they enrolled 28 patients on it because one of them, this guy named Robert Randall, sued the federal government back in 1976. He sued them saying, you're putting me in jeopardy. You can't jail someone for trying to save their own life. That's one of our rules here in America. It's a affirmative defense, they call it. You have an affirmative defense to breaking the law if you had no choice but to break the law to save your life. And he argued that he had glaucoma, and smoking pot was the only way to treat his glaucoma, and the courts agreed, and that's what kind of forced the government to have to create this University of Mississippi pot farm and to create this investigative new drug program, into which they put Robert Randall and a bunch of other patients, including Elvie Musica, who's an Oregon resident, who I know pretty well, and Irv Rosenfeld, a stockbroker out there in Florida, who I've met and spoken with many times. So I've seen their weed. They get it in these big tins, about 300 pre-rolled joints in this tin. And the weed from the University of Mississippi is the worst, shakiest, stick stems and seeds, low THC, barely above hemp ditch weed. Like, I would not smoke this stuff. It'd give you a headache. It's terrible. Like 4 to 5% THC max. So if they're doing studies with this University of Mississippi pot that only has 4 or 5% THC in it, and they're finding that people with anxiety and PTSD aren't getting any relief, well, no duh. You might as well give a cancer patient a baby aspirin. Like, what the hell, man? The modern marijuana that we are using to treat these conditions in these states like Oregon and California and such, Michigan, Ohio, any place with medical marijuana, if your stuff is anything less than 15% THC, people aren't touching it. And we've got some cultivars out here in Oregon that are above 30%. Raw plant marijuana, 30% THC. So until we start seeing some studies that are able to utilize the actual cannabis products that people out here in the real world are using, I again would take with a grain of salt any of these studies that purport to be showing that there's harm or that there's lack of efficacy from cannabis. Of course, the other scare they'll give you is about the gummies and the kids, right? Oh, what about the children? The children will get into the gummies and they'll overdose. Oh my God. First of all, if your kids do get into the gummies, that's on you. You're the parent. Put your shit away. You got to store your guns. You got to store your alcohol. You got to store your weed. Lock that shit up. But second of all, if your kid does get into some of the weed, he's going to get a little sleepy. Going to get a little scared. And in 4 hours, you can sleep it off and the kid will be fine. So I'm not too worried about that. But they want to bring this up as if it's a reason why we should make weed illegal or stop trying to legalize weed. That, again, is just an indictment of bad parenting, not the legalization of marijuana. So they'll give these excuses, and they'll also give the excuse as to why marijuana legalization may have stalled out as to the results that have happened in the other states, that some of these people traveling to from Texas or Louisiana or wherever and taking a visit to, say, Las Vegas or New York, they smell pot everywhere. Oh my God, I smell pot everywhere. smells like pot everywhere. And then that becomes a reason, well, you don't want to legalize pot because then you'll have to smell pot everywhere. I guess we're just going to have to continue locking people up, depriving them of their freedom, and ruining their prospects for a better life. So the stall in marijuana legalization, I think, is natural in that we have picked off the low-hanging fruit. And we're kind of in this equilibrium now where the people in the liberal states that want the weed can get it. The people in the conservative states that can't get the weed in their state are close enough now to another state that they can get it. Namely, Idaho. That's consuming somewhere around $8, $9 million worth of marijuana per month coming out of the city of Ontario, sitting right there on the Idaho-Oregon border. It's really going to have to come down to legalization at the national level at this point. I really don't think we're going to get legalization through places like Iowa and Kentucky, you know, some of these more red rural states. We're not going to get legalization through them at the state level. Too many players involved, too many competing interests involved. So it'll take a national legalization push. And while the current occupant of the Oval Office has made some noise about rescheduling into Schedule 3, that I believe is a trap. I believe Schedule 3 at the federal level could be a trap because have you been to a ketamine dispensary lately? Been to any steroids dispensaries lately? Codeine dispensaries? No, anytime you want to get steroids or ketamine or codeine, you have to get a prescription from your doctor and you have to go to a pharmacist to get it filled. Why would the federal government want to see cannabis treated any differently if it were a Schedule 3 drug? Can you imagine the federal government finalizing cannabis as a Schedule 3 drug and then the Trump maladministration turning to all of these legal states and saying, by the way, all your current recreational dispensaries are illegally dispensing Schedule 3 pharmaceuticals without a DEA permit. How easy would it be then to use the enforcement mechanisms of the pharmaceuticals like steroids and ketamine to shut down medical and recreational marijuana in all of the states and shoehorn it into that pharmaceutical frame where you have to go to see a real doctor and get a real prescription and pay real money through your real insurance at a real pharmacy to get something pre-made in a specific dose-dependent fashion? No, you can't have raw plant cannabis any more than the people that were prescribing some oxycodone can have some raw opium. No, that's not medicine. We've got to have it in a pill or an inhaler or an injectable of some sort, a patch maybe. So I fear this talk at the federal level of moving cannabis to Schedule 3. I think cannabis ought to be on the same drug schedule as alcohol and tobacco, namely none. Deschedule marijuana. Take it out of the Controlled Substances Act. It's a plant. You can't control a plant. Nature always finds a way. Treat it like alcohol. Treat it like tobacco. We've got the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Make it alcohol, tobacco, firearms, explosives, and cannabis. Because it deserves to be treated at about the same level as alcohol. Yeah, we got to check IDs for it. Yeah, there should be punishments for misuse of it. Or the commission of crimes or accidents while impaired by it. But the idea that we'd have to see doctors and go to pharmacies and have it so strictly, tightly controlled, that's a relic of the 1990s medical marijuana era. I think by now we've all come to understand where gummy has been the common parlance for suburban moms that want to take the edge off. When smoking a joint is no longer seen as some sort of radical act in a movie or TV show. I think it's time that we all recognize what the general public understands is that marijuana is this nice, friendly herb that can be used for relaxation and some health benefits. that needs to be treated no more onerously than we treat alcohol or tobacco. That's my 420 message for the day. Happy 420 to everyone out there.
No matter how mighty the overlords may seem.
Overlords?
I know, the corporate overlords.
When the overlords came, she lost her faith.
Your evil corporate overlords will let you?
The tech oligarchs have published their manifesto, and folks, it is a sight to behold. I've posted the link up on my Blue Sky feed. You can find it. Got a thread called On This Technoligarch Pseudo-Fascist Fundamentalism, and it's from these guys out at Palantir. You know, Palantir, the company that's hoovering up all of our private data to create the mass surveillance that is so yearned for by our fascist overlords. And so these Palantir tech guys, these Silicon Valley oligarch types, these Peter Thiels and Curtis Yarvins and Elon Musk and such, they think democracy is old. They think democracy doesn't work anymore and that the future is this technological republic, they call it. And they've published a manifesto, this entire book about it, the technological republic. And they posted a thread the other day listing 22 bullet points for their technological republic. And I'm just going to go through the ones that I found most compelling. This is their explanation as to why the tech oligarchs should be given free rein to run the world, turn it over to the AI overlords, because democracy is weak and fragile and inefficient. So here we go. Their number 2 point.
We must rebel against the tyranny of the apps. Is the iPhone our greatest creative, if not crowning, achievement as a civilization? The object has changed our lives, but it may also now be limiting and constraining our sense of the possible.
The iPhone. The iPhone as the crowning achievement of civilization. You know, I was rooting for vaccines and sanitation and plumbing and agriculture and the written word and, yeah, sure, but the screen that brings us fast food deliveries, internet porn, music playlists, and spam, I guess that's kind of neat, too. Their number 5 point.
The question is not whether AI weapons will be built. It is who will build them and for what purpose. Our adversaries will not pause to indulge in theatrical debates about the merits of developing technologies with critical military and national security applications. They will proceed.
Okay, so we have to develop the autonomous killing machines before our enemies do it. The future's going to be all about AI-enabled Terminators, robo-dogs, and drones on the battlefield, and we must be dominant in that technology. Okay, got it. And now their next point.
National service should be a universal duty. We should, as a society, seriously consider moving away from an all-volunteer force and only fight the next war if everyone shares in the risk and the cost.
Right, okay, so just because we'll have stockpiles of autonomous robotic killing machines doesn't mean we don't also need to draft into the military all the young men who don't have rich daddies to get their podiatrist friend to write waivers for their bone spurs, right? Everyone shares in the risk and the cost, Palantir? I don't think so. That's never how it works out. And yeah, previous draft armies worked great, right? Palantir continues.
Public servants need not be our priests. Any business that compensated its employees in the way that the federal government compensates public servants would struggle to survive.
Ooh, those government employees living their life of luxury and decadence, what with their unions and ombudsmen and civil service protections. What folly to treat these parasites as if they deserve any of our appreciation. We should scrutinize every aspect of their existence, of these government workers. But also,
we should show far more grace toward those who have subjected themselves to public life. The eradication of any space for forgiveness a jettisoning of any tolerance for the complexities and contradictions of the human psyche, may leave us with a cast of characters at the helm we will grow to regret.
So, wait a minute. Your previous point was the government workers, oh, we can't treat them so good. If a company treated them so like we treat government workers, they'd go out of business. But, gee, why do we got to be so mean to people that work in government? Golly, if we keep scrutinizing them for their racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-Semitic, and criminal things they've done and said, why, we'll only have stale, boring, rules-following hall monitors leading our country.
Our society has grown too eager to hasten and is often gleeful at the demise of its enemies. The vanquishing of an opponent is a moment to pause, not rejoice. The atomic age is ending. One age of deterrence, the atomic age is ending, and a new era of deterrence built on AI is set to begin.
Okay. So it's a shame that we've taken so much glee in vanquishing our enemies without a second thought. All right, now let's get back to building our Terminator Skynet backed by troops conscripted from the ranks of the poor. Again, Palantir.
No other country in the history of the world has advanced progressive values more than this one. The United States is far from perfect, but it is easy to forget how much more opportunity exists in this country for those who are not hereditary elites than in any other nation on the planet.
Yeah, the country that has no universal health care, no paid parental leave, no mandatory vacation time, more than one mass shooting a day, bans on transgender health care, bans on abortion, and the largest prison population in the world has a word on progressive values. Emmett Till, Sitting Bull, and Powhatan could not be reached for comment. And for those who are not hereditary elites, is this Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and all these Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, all these guys that got massive funding from their folks who all had their hereditary support to build their massive companies, want to lecture us about opportunity? Okay. Palantir continues.
We should applaud those who attempt to build where the market has failed to act. The culture almost snickers at Musk's interest in grand narrative, as if billionaires ought to simply stay in their lane of enriching themselves. Any curiosity or genuine interest in the value of what he has created is essentially dismissed, or perhaps lurks from beneath a thinly veiled scorn.
Yeah, actually, we'd prefer Musk in the lane of paying his fair share of taxes while building his narrative of hijacking the talents of real engineers to create the rolling dumpster that parts fall off of, the burning EVs that lock you inside, the exploding rockets, and the non-existent hyperloops.
Silicon Valley must play a role in addressing violent crime. Many politicians across the United States have essentially shrugged when it comes to violent crime, abandoning any serious efforts to address the problem or take on any risk with their constituencies or donors in coming up with solutions and experiments in what should be a desperate bid to save lives.
Yeah, sure. The role in addressing violent crime, of course, will be increasing the surveillance state and more robo-dogs. Not paying our fair share of taxes and lobbying politicians to expand safety nets and job programs that are proven to reduce violent crime.
The ruthless exposure of the private lives of public figures drives far too much talent away from government service, the public arena, and the shallow and petty assaults against those who dare to do something other than enrich themselves have become so unforgiving that the Republic is left with a significant roster of ineffectual, empty vessels whose ambition one would forgive if there were any genuine belief structure lurking within.
Like, interesting, this is the second time you bring up that the public figures, we can't do too much scrutiny. You guys that are building the surveillance state for all of us, that have the flock cameras and the facial recognition and the DNA databases for all of us, scamming all of our metadata off of our phones, all the scrutiny you put on us, this is the second time in your manifesto, in your 22-point manifesto, that you've brought up there's too much exposure of the private lives of public figures. As if the focusing on whether you rape kids and beat wives and cheat on mistresses and do insider trading and do drugs and commit crimes, why, if we keep focusing all that, we'll have no choice but to have to just sit back and stack up piles of money, and you'll have nothing but Boy Scouts and choir boys running government. Palantir continues.
The pervasive intolerance of religious belief in certain circles must be resisted. The elite's intolerance of religious belief is perhaps one of the most telling signs that its political project constitutes a less open intellectual movement than many within it would claim.
Yeah, you all think you're so tolerant, and yet you demean the faith of the people who want to put gays in the closet, eliminate trans folk, force women to bear children, think declining birth rates among teenagers is bad, deny healthcare and services to sinners, and see Jews as a rapture prop. That's the kind of religious tolerance that Palantir is talking about.
Palantir continues. Some cultures have produced vital advances. Others remain dysfunctional and regressive. All cultures are now equal. Criticism and value judgments are forbidden. Yet this new dogma glosses over the fact that certain cultures, and indeed subcultures, have produced wonders. Others have proven middling and worse, regressive and harmful.
You know, savages. The merciless Indian savages, the 3/5 of the black guys. That's what this is all about. They really think what they see as Western white Christian culture is superior to all others. The others were regressed. Not that the others were colonized, not that the others were decimated, were genocided, that they were, all of their resources were exploited, and that they were kept in poverty by our actions. That the benefits that you ascribe to Western culture only came through the exploitations of other cultures. This is just naked fascism. That's what these guys want. They're telling you right out front, right there in print, we want to be fascists.
They conclude with, we must resist the shallow temptation of a vacant and hollow pluralism. We, in America, and more broadly the West, have for the past half century resisted defining national cultures in the name of inclusivity. But inclusion into what?
Yeah, okay, last 50 years. Yeah, if we can say anything about 1976 to 2026, it's how thoroughly we resisted defining our national culture as anything but that which sprang from white men who founded this nation. This insanity. They truly do not understand what the beauty and power of America is. I heard J.D. Vance talking about this the other day, that if anybody can say that they're an American just because they agree with the ideals of America, they come here and they agree with the Declaration of Independence, they agree with the Constitution, that makes them American. And J.D. Vance was going against that, arguing against that by saying that someone who fought in the Civil War, their descendants are more American than an immigrant who comes here who believes in the Constitution. It's blood and soil talk. That's what they want. They want a white Christian nationalist homeland, and the people who were born here, the good white folks who were born here, even if their grandpappy took up arms against the United States, against the Constitution, against the Declaration of Independence, and fought for a separate nation in which black people could still be treated as property, they think those guys are more American. Folks, I got shoes that have lasted longer than the Confederacy. My podcasting days for normal lasted longer than the Confederacy. No, I think a Somali immigrant
I think a Honduran immigrant, I think a Tibetan immigrant who comes to America, who travels that massive distance, who overcomes adversity, who then comes to our country, obeys our laws, studies our Declaration, studies our Constitution, studies our history, takes that citizenship test that most native-born Americans can't pass, and goes through all that trouble to become an American citizen, I think that person is more of an American citizen than a descendant of the Civil War who celebrates that, who still celebrates and reveres the traitors that tried to destroy our country. I think that immigrant is far more of an American than the 1,600 people pardoned by Donald Trump for trying to overthrow our Constitution. I think those people are more American than anyone serving in Donald Trump's cabinet right now. That's the joy, that's the beauty of what it is to be an American. That an American can look like anybody. An American can be anybody who subscribes to our belief system, to our credo, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that's just a few of them. And we wrote down a bunch more, and we didn't write down even more. And it's this diversity that is our strength, that makes us the greatest country in the world, that gives us the broadest menu of food choices. It gives us the broadest menu of artistic and cultural choices. From Chinese New Year to Cinco de Mayo to Mardi Gras to St. Patrick's Day to Flag Day to Jewish New Year. There's so much in America to celebrate, to enjoy. And that diversity is our strength. We're not all the same. Hell, it's something you know from agriculture. You plant one crop all the time, one monoculture, and you're subject to blight. You're subject to starvation and famine. It's through the diversity of crops, the diversity of people, that a nation grows. And I'm just sick of these right-wingers, these flag wavers out there, who think they have a lock on what it means to be an American with their Lee Greenwood song and their big belt buckles and gas-guzzling pickups, that think that's what America is. Well, that's part of what America is. That's the other thing that frustrates me so much about this, is that they want their culture to be the only culture. Or at least be superior to and default for this nation. Whereas we want all cultures to be able to thrive, including theirs. Like, we want to give them healthcare too. We want to give them parental leave too. There's one side in this country, the left, that is into cooperation, that wants us all to cooperate and get along and form a more perfect union. And there's another side, a side represented by the right, represented by these tech bros, represented by Palantir and Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, that thinks they have some brand new intellectual defense of the same old racist fascism of mid-20th century Europe.
He's not coming to America.
Everything was going to America, but now I'm not going to America.
Then you leave in America.
You're not going to America.
Leaving America, it's sort of precipitated an unabashed coming of age.
One thing I don't think that we're really fully understanding here about this suck it Trump term is how now the world is moving on without America. It's one thing to be a person in a foreign country looking at us electing Donald Trump the first time. Okay, you had your demagogue, you had your fascist movement, everybody got swept up in it. But after committing an insurrection, and us not holding him accountable, and then allowing him to run again, and then him winning, How can the rest of the world ever trust us again? Even if we get a Democrat in office in 2028, how are they not going to look at that and think, well, in 4 years, 2032, you might elect another fascist again? Unless we in 2028 seriously bring some consequences and accountability and eradicate this rot from within our politics that has been brought to us from Donald Trump and the MAGA movement, there's no way the rest of the world can ever trust us again. And the rest of the world is moving on without us. And I keep seeing these things as I flip through my feed on social media. And it's also something I've been mentioning in previous podcasts about how here in America, we're no longer isolated by our oceans. We're no longer able to fool our populace into thinking we're the greatest country in the world just because the only other countries we can drive to are Canada and Mexico. We have the internet now. We have Facebook and we have Instagram Reels and TikToks, and we can see videos and posts coming from all over the world of how good they're having it. Just this week, I've been flipping through my feed. I saw this one post showing how they've got a pancreatic cancer mRNA vaccine. The new mRNA vaccines that are showing such wonderful promise at curing all sorts of things like pancreatic cancer. The kind of thing, when you get the diagnosis for pancreatic cancer, it's time for you to update your will. Most people don't make it past 6 months once they get that diagnosis. They got people with these new vaccines living 6 years with pancreatic cancer. Meanwhile, our head of health and human services is stopping on the side of the road to cut the dicks off of dead raccoons. He canceled all of our mRNA research. He thinks it's evil. We should be using ivermectin or some shit like that. They're moving on without us. I see in Germany. Germany just activated its largest ever solar installation. One farm, 1.5 million homes, zero carbon. This solar park covers 3,500 hectares and produces 2.1 terawatt hours annually, replacing two coal plants that operated on the same land since 2022. Germany, moving on to solar. France, I saw something in France where any car park, any parking lot that has more than 80 spaces has to be covered in solar panels. I see in Australia where they got so much solar energy that they're offering 3 free hours of power between noon and 3 p.m. to the entire country. 3 free hours of power because they got so much electric power being generated by solar. We got to get rid of some. The rest of the world is moving on with us. Morocco has opened a solar complex so large we could power an entire country. Meanwhile, here in the United States, in 2025, we recovered 13.6 million barrels of oil daily, 2/3 of that from fracking. Got this post from Finland. There's a company called Emerald that is transmitting energy without cables, using microwaves and lasers. It's something Nikola Tesla came up with about a century ago, but now it's finally being put into practice. They've got power being generated and transmitted wirelessly. Wireless power. Imagine a future where we can have all sorts of solar arrays out in space collecting free power and beaming it straight down to our cities to be distributed. That's the rest of the world. The rest of the world is moving on without us. Meanwhile, here in the United States, we've come up with a special stock for your AR-15 that makes it fire like it's fully automatic. We've come up with a pickup truck that has wheels that turn sideways, and we've got pills to combat obesity and impotence. So you can see where our priorities lie. But the rest of the world is going to move on without us. They're going to decouple from American currency. It'll no longer be the petrodollar. We'll be buying all of our oil in Chinese yuan. The BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, I forget the other ones, they're forming a whole new economic alliance to compete with the EU and America. The EU, they're moving off of Microsoft software. They're getting Windows off of their computers and putting in Linux because they don't want to be tied down to any American companies or American technology. Their Europeans now are supplying their own fighter jets, their own helicopters. They're going away from buying American technology. After we go and threaten to take over Greenland, Denmark is like, well, we don't want to have any of these F-35 U.S. flyers, U.S. Planes that they could have kill switches in we don't know about. The rest of the world is moving on without us. And it's going to be wild over this next half century, coming to grips with the fact that English won't be the default language, the dollar won't be the default currency, American culture, music, movies won't be the default anymore. We're going to be seen as that backwater, third world dystopian future from like Blade Runner or something. They're going to laugh at us, the place that still has cars that run on gas while they're getting from place to place on their solar-powered bullet trains. Are you as sick of this as I am? Do you want to move forward to the Star Trek future that we all know is possible? Well, then we're going to have to get rid of Republicans. We're going to have to vote in overwhelming numbers. And we're going to have to demand of our politicians a view to the future that includes everyone. And the rest of the world looking at us, we've got 135 mass shootings this year. And we're only at what? Day 110, 109, something like that? We have more than one mass shooting a day. The most recent one, a father killing 7 of his own kids and another kid, a friend, some other kid, just come over to play, and wounding 2 others. The horrific story coming out of Bossier City, Louisiana, Mike Johnson's home district. A place I have visited, the place where our GMC got keyed because it had a Harris Walls sticker on it. And the rest of the country looks at us like we are insane. How can you live this way? How can you continue to let your school children not just get gunned down in school, but have to suffer the trauma of going through active shooter drills? Most kids are never going to experience a school shooting, but they're all going to experience active shooter drills. They're all going to experience that terror and fear of knowing every day at any time someone might burst in with a gun and shoot them. Just like, I guess that gets them ready for their adulthood when they can grow up and know that any company could just fire them for any reason. They might be just kicked out of their house and put out onto the street. They might be just denied life-saving health care and treatment. Because this is America. We're all free. Free to die in the cold on the streets without food or medicine. Yay, freedom. But I don't know about you. I don't want that. I want us to move into that Star Trek future. I want us to rejoin the rest of the community of civilized nations, democratic nations, diverse nations, tolerant nations. And maybe together, if we keep pushing forward, keep marching, keep protesting, keep writing, keep calling our elected officials, and most of all, turning out to vote and bringing 5 people with us, we can get past this. We can be the America of the future that we deserve. Strap in, it's going to be a bumpy ride, and don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And that's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Not this again.
Oh, God, not again.
Is that absolutely necessary?
Okay, strap in for this one, folks. I saw a factoid online that I just had to share with you, and it kind of blew my mind. Are you ready? Okay. The premiere of The Simpsons is as far away from today as the premiere of The Simpsons was from the premiere of The Ed Sullivan Show in 1948.
Oh, wow.
That's right. The Simpsons is as old as, to us today as The Ed Sullivan Show was as old in 1987 when The Simpsons premiered. Does that make you feel old or what? Oh, and one other thing. Do you notice I did it again? I made it all the way through an entire podcast without talking about Donald J. Trump and his fighting with the Pope, and the Strait of Hormuz is open, but now it's closed, but now it's opened again, and now he's going to once again destroy the entire civilization, or maybe he's not going to, and I think I'm going to make a habit of this. I think I can do it. I think going forward, we are going to try to have as many Trump-free podcasts as possible. Let me know what you think. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com. And nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other. You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.